joining us. My name is Tom Benton, and it's my honor to chair today's meeting for the Grand Junction Regional Airport Authority, November 12th, 2024. I'd like to call the meeting to order, and I appreciate everybody's attendance that's here, and we'll be recognizing as we get into the agenda. So completed our call to order. You'll join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have a fairly robust agenda today. We'd like to do roll call for members that are here, but we have one of our commissioners joining us online. So we will call out names for the commissioners and just respond yay if they're here or yes, present, whichever. So Commissioner Schrader.
Present.
Thank you. Commissioner Davis.
Here.
Commissioner Kennedy.
Here.
Commissioner Kleinman.
Here.
Commissioner Marshall.
Here.
Commissioner West.
Here.
And Chair Tom Benton's here as well. So I'd like for the staff to be introduced to today's meeting.
Yes, I can do that. So in the room we have Executive Director Angela Padalecki, Finance Manager Jennifer Croker, Director of Facilities Ben Peck, Office Coordinator Christina Warren, Finance Specialist Travis Fortnier, Fleet and ARF, or Fleet Manager and ARF Chief Curtis Hayner, Human Resource Manager Victoria Hightower, and then online we have Preston Tober, Brandon Maton, and Tyler McClymont, who are ops in the ops department, and then myself, Cameron Reese, the board clerk, and then also online we have Dylan Heberline, Director of Operations.
Thank you, Cameron. I appreciate everybody's attendance, both in person and online. We also have some guests with us today, and I may miss a few, but I'll try not to today. Ryan Springer from Sequent, thank you for joining us. From FCI, we have Justin Mindenhall and Lance Kramer. Gentlemen, thank you for being here. Jeremy Lee from Mead and Hunt. Jeremy, appreciate your attendance as well. Brad Rolfe is online, I believe, from Mead and Hunt.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see, and Sam, from the Daily Sentinel.
Yeah.
Sam's here, Pohnhaus. Thank you, Sam, for your attendance.
Josie Hyde from Gensler.
Josie Hyde's here, and of course, our legal counsel, Dan Raymer. Thank you all for your attendance. Did I miss somebody?
We also have, we have Rebecca Wagner.
Oh, there we go. I was looking this way, Rebecca. Thank you for joining us.
And then online we have Roger Noblock from Garber.
Okay, good. All right. Approval of the agenda. Has everybody had a chance to review the agendas presented today?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
If so, staff, are there any last minute changes that we, Angela, any last minute changes to the agenda?
No changes.
Great, thank you. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
So moved. Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you, Thaddeus. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Next item on the agenda are commissioner comments. Anything from commissioners? Just a quick note, sincere appreciation to Jennifer and Travis for your efforts on the budget. That is a very complicated task, takes a lot of time. Thank you for doing that. And also appreciate our commissioners are working with Gensler on the reshaping of the image, shall we say?
On the terminal.
In the terminal, right. So I know that's extra time, Thaddeus and Lindy, for that. So well done, thank you. And I might have missed some other important event, like handling diversions or something in the last one, but I appreciate staff's extra efforts along those lines.
I heard the 5K went incredibly well, and I'm sorry I couldn't join you, but I heard great things from community members on that.
Great, thank you, Lindy. All right. Let's see, what else do we have here? Do we have any citizen comments?
Mr. Chairman, we do not have any citizen comments.
Correct. I think we have one other special event that the airport likes to recognize, and that is employees whose commitment reached certain milestones. Cameron, have you been here 5 years?
Yep, just 5 years.
Okay. Congratulations.
Yeah.
decided to stick around. Good teamwork, and maybe an occasional little pop. Thank you, Cameron, for your effort, sir. Really appreciate it. Okay, no citizen comments today? Hearing none. We do have a consent agenda with a few items on it, some meeting minutes, our health insurance, employee health insurance policy, if you all had a chance to review that. Transportation Security Clearinghouse Services Agreement, that's an important thing, as we manage from a human process to an automated process. And our CONUS seating purchase, so getting some new seats. Everybody have a chance to review those? Pretty good. Entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? I'm sorry, yes, well, I'll open it up for discussion.
Thank you. On item C, Transportation Security Clearing Services Agreement, in the agreement with the provider, are we indemnified if there's a security breach of the biometric and personally identifiable information?
That is a good question, and I am going to turn it over to Dan to answer that question.
Dan, did you hear the question?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part. If we are indemnified for which piece, for what liability?
Yeah, I'm sorry, indemnified if there's a breach of the biometric data or the personally identifiable information that we're collecting.
Breach of security on identity and
biometric data.
Biometric data, okay.
Sir, if I may, I will tell you that the provider will have no additional data, sir, that they don't hold anything further than what we already have. So they're simply the conduit that allows for the data to be entered into our access control system that we currently own, and will also, sir, be transmitted to the transportation clearinghouse that we already use too.
By this vendor?
Yes, but nothing is held at all. It is solely data entry. So from a data, fantastic question, and I certainly appreciate the liability concern. Mm-hmm. But the data is entered. The air badge simply acts as the conduit into all of those interfaces. There is no air badge database or no data that's
kept. But data is being transferred.
It is, sir. Yes.
So that data could be leaked. On a transaction by transaction basis.
From the perspective of your concern, absolutely, it could be. It is all encrypted, and it's all in encrypted tunnels that go to each of the individual SSL encrypted tunnels there. But there certainly is data transmission.
Okay. So, and really, what my question is does this vendor, or for that matter, any vendor that's handling our data on behalf of us, even on a transactional basis, indemnify us if there's a breach of that data?
And I think that, to the question to Dan, I think that's fantastic. Dan, I would say, though, that we're probably asking more about our actual relationship and contract with AAAE, less with the clearinghouse and more with AAAE, given that's who the transaction will be through, sir.
Okay. Dan, can you weigh in on...
Yeah, there is. I mean, the short answer is no. They do not, by virtue of this agreement, agree to indemnify us for their breach. You know, the indemnity, as you well know, is just, you know, would someone stand in our shoes in the event of a claim against us if they are responsible for a cyber attack or data breach or something like that? You know, they would face the liability associated with that. But, I mean, the direct answer to your question is no, there's not an indemnity provision in here where they would stand in our shoes in a defense.
So, with regards to creating that liability, if the data is collected here, does that not expose us to liability?
No, I don't think it adds to the liability that we face today. We collect that data. I think that was Ryan giving that answer. But, right. I mean, we collect that personally identifying information today.
Right.
And we have used the clearinghouse. AAAE has provided this service for us. So, I mean, this is not really a change other than the identity management system as explained in the AIS. And this is the continuation of a vetting service that we have been using.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes,
questions on the consent agenda items? Hearing none, entertain a motion. No, we already have a motion. Since there's no further discussion, we'll have a vote on this consent agenda. All those in favor of approving the consent agenda as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, thank you, Thaddeus. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries, thank you. Our action items today are fairly robust. Thank you, Angela, for digging up some things that takes a lot of insight and opportunity for us. First one is Resolution 2406 to adopt a budget and appropriate funds for 2025. There's been a little bit of changes along this, I think, since the last meeting, right? And I think when we, as a commission, look at this, as our big spend happens in the next few years, this will probably be something you all will see, not just this year, but in years ahead. So, Angela, you might want to just chat a little bit about kind of how things have changed, or your group.
Sure. So hopefully everyone received the email Jennifer sent out, which I think summarized those changes nicely. But the big changes are a seal coat project on the land side, and that actually goes into operating expenses. That one you can almost put as operating or capital, but for consistency, we want to put it in operating. It also makes sense there based on how we charge the airlines for different operating costs at the airports. So that's a major change on that side. The health insurance costs came in close enough to budget to where we didn't feel like we needed to make any changes there. But on the capital side, we actually added a little bit more. We finalized and refined those capital expenditures and contributions numbers based on our final CIP planning meetings with FAA and CDOT. Again, this is very conservative, and you know, the budget amendment that you approved last month for 2024, that reflects the max amount of capital improvements we anticipate making this year. Will likely come in significantly lower than that. Similarly, 2025 represents that maximum amount of work that we think could be done, really agnostic to how much work gets done this year. We're hoping that we'll avoid a budget amendment, but those are the major changes we're on the capital side. You did see us increase from $2 million to $2.5 million, the capital improvement budget for non-grant funded projects. That is due to a couple of reasons. One, just some work that we were hoping to get done this year where we're uncertain which year it will land in, and we want to make sure there's enough space in the budget next year if it ends up there. And then number two, it's to make sure that we have enough budget to complete all those projects, in particular in the terminal, that makes sense to do at the same time as our passenger loading bridge project, and accounts for the fact that for the terminal refresh in particular, where we anticipate replacing carpet in the hold rooms and the furniture, we have not yet been issued build grants for that. We do anticipate that much, if not all, of that work is eligible. We are very conservative in how we accounted for that in the budget and wanted to make sure there was enough funding appropriated for the portion that will not be grant eligible.
Questions for Angela or Jennifer regarding the budget? Changes? Ben, you could be a very busy guy this night.
It's looking that way.
Okay. We'll go ahead and ask for a motion on this item.
Mr. Chair, I put forth a motion. Resolution number 2024-06 to adopt the 2025 budget and appropriation funds for 2025.
Thank you, Chris. Is there a second?
Second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Further discussion. This is a roll call vote. So for the approval of this item as moved and seconded, Commissioner Kleinman.
Yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Commissioner Kennedy?
Yes.
Commissioner Marshall?
Yes.
Commissioner West?
Yes.
Commissioner Schrader?
Yes.
Thank you. Chair votes in approval as well. All right, thank you. This will work itself upstream to the state. I think this planning process makes a lot of sense because it gives you some leeway with respect to the expense side of the equation. It will keep Ben busy for a few more years. May defer your retirement, man. I don't know if that's going to happen. Good enough. Thank you for your thoughtful review of this. I will move forward. Next item. Notice of award and contract approval for Oshkosh Airport Products for the acquisition of an ARFF vehicle. And presenting that will be...
The only one not hunting.
Oh, good.
I'm just kidding. Hunting season is a busy season at the airport. That was a joke. But this is a recommendation of contract approval to purchase our new ARFF truck. Really happy to report that this came in at a favorable price, you know, more than $200,000 below our estimate. CDOT was excited for us as well. The way that breakdown will end up working is we'll pay for about 30% of it. And the CDOT grant for $900,000 that was issued in the spring will cover about 70% of it. The lead time that they have listed is long, 720 days. So we're hoping that we'll get it earlier than that, but that's what they're contractually committed to. We talked about how the earlier the better on this. Those lead times are only getting longer as a lot of airports and fire departments are eager to swap out their trucks as there's new advanced and more environmentally friendly firefighting foam available.
So $1.2 million truck that costs us $340,000. Not a bad deal. Right. So, and a 2-year lead time, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get into it. What was that? What would that have been 10 years ago, do you think?
I don't know.
The truck.
Yeah.
10 years ago
it would
have been 3,000 gallons.
So this truck has twice the capacity for water as our current trucks. But
about 800,000.
800,000, is that about what you would see too?
And then lead time still 18 months, 2 years?
They were less back then. I would say it was a year, a little over a year.
Okay.
So I think it's very busy in that world right now.
Mm-hmm. A little choked up. The supply chain's a little choked up. Okay.
Great. Yes. Now, are we in good shape with our current ARFF truck that we can wait 2 years for this?
Yes. So fortunately, so right now we are required based on our index with FAA, based on the current activity, we're required to have one 1,500 gallon truck that's always available. We currently have two of those. One of them is old, but Curtis does an incredible job maintaining it, and one of them is newer. And so we're in good shape, but we're going to feel way better when we get this truck. The reason why we purchased the 3,000 gallon truck is as the airport continues to grow and evolve, we'll likely move up in index, and that will require that we have one 3,000 gallon truck or two 1,500 gallon trucks. So at this point, we don't even anticipate getting rid of our older truck, because having the two 1,500 in reserve means that we actually have a backup under that higher index, and so we want to maintain that flexibility. But we're in good shape. Curtis does an incredible job. The FAA, every year for our inspection, you know, talks about how that our equipment is better maintained than any airport they go to. Like, we are all Curtis fans, but they're the biggest Curtis fans. So he's particular. Don't leave a water bottle in the truck.
Additional questions for Angela or Curtis?
Is an extended warranty of 23,000, does that pencil out to be a good deal on a... I don't buy many ARFF trucks, so it's come on, Chris.
I think so. I think, and it's 3 years. And they're sometimes apprehensive about warranties and don't really want to do extended warranties with a lot of manufacturers. So I'm very happy that we all decided to do that, because that'll take a lot of the guesswork and problems out for that first trial period, so to speak.
Good question. We're just a couple of minutes ahead of schedule, so if there's a techie question that you want to ask, we have time for a couple of techie questions.
Mine was just about that EPA foam. So this new truck will accommodate that higher grade foam.
Okay. So it'll have the fluorine-free foam.
Thank you.
And it'll allow us also to, you know, make that conversion on all of our vehicles.
Oh, amazing. Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Curtis, one techie question. The specs look like that you had going out was a two-system dispersal, and I'm not getting it quite right, but I noticed that this one just channels it through one valve, maybe, versus two?
The bumper turret and the main overhead turret are going to be almost close to exactly the same. So the redundancy is if one goes down, I can keep the truck in service.
Okay.
There will not be an HRED, a high reach extendable turret. That we have that.
So when Oshkosh came back with a different configuration, you guys were okay with that?
Yes, yeah, there was a lot of kind of groundwork and footwork done on all of that, but I think in the end we're gonna get the truck that we want.
Okay.
That all of the ARC guys want, the airport wants, and I really think it's moving forward. You know, at least the next generation of ARC guys are gonna have a really good piece of equipment.
Okay. Thanks for the explanation. Entertain a motion for approval.
Motion to approve.
Notice of award of contract approval to Oshkosh Airport Products for acquisition of ARC vehicle. It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
This one we can do by voice vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Thaddeus. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Next item on the agenda is item C, the recommendation of professional airport general contractor on-call services. This is to approve the SCI construction on-call general contractor service, authorize executive director to sign. Okay. Angela?
As this board knows, we utilize on-call contractors to really augment staff and enable us to perform work, even if it's grant funded, in an efficient way by issuing task orders and things, as you can see by item D on the agenda with Gensler. So I'll use Gensler as an example. They're our on-call architect, and so we take the time on the procurement to actually clear a lot of the hurdles that we have to clear in order to use different colors of money, different types of grant funding that we get. So the way we procure this will allow us to use grant funding for projects and provide a more efficient way of especially getting smaller projects done. It's exhausting having to bid out work all the time. And so the main value in having that on-call general contractor is when we have a project pop up, either an opportunity or usually in our world it's a problem that needs to be urgently solved, you actually have that mechanism already in place that's agnostic to the funding source that we can just issue a task order and get that work done. It also gives us a partner that is more familiar with the airport and can help advise and inform the work we're doing and when we're doing it, and knows, hey, if we're doing this time, you know how you wanted to do this thing over here, we talked about it last year. It would actually make sense to do that at the same time. And that's been our experience so far with our on-call general contractor. FCI was awarded this when we bid this out, I think it was 6 years ago now. But we're required when we use grant funding to bid it out at least every 5 years. We haven't used it for any grant funded projects in the last year, so there's no issue there. But that has certainly been our experience here. This is really common at airports to do things this way. And it was an evaluation committee. I know this was highlighted in the agenda item summary, so I won't go into detail, but I think it was a robust evaluation committee who evaluated things and unanimously approved or recommended FCI.
Everybody have had a chance to review the contract?
Mm-hmm.
We'll do a motion, then we'll call for discussion. Is there a motion to approve the professional agreement contractor services on call?
Yes, I move to approve a contract with FCI Constructors, Inc. to provide on-call general contractor services and authorize the executive director to sign.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Discussion.
Thank you, Chair. What is the executive director's limit on spending without bringing to the board?
It's 100,000. Good question.
And is that statutory or board policy?
Board policy.
Is there a statutory limit?
There is. So the state's statute sets it at 250,000. We actually worked to have that amended. It was $10,000 prior. So if you look at old board meetings, you're like, wow, they used to approve so many tiny things. That's why.
Trash can lines.
So we raised that up to 250,000, and then it's also pegged to a CPI, so it'll naturally float up. But the airport board, it allowed them to make a decision then on where they want that limit to be, and that was set at $100,000 last year.
Thank you. Is that adequate for your needs?
I think it is right
okay,
now. Thank
great.
You for asking. Yeah, and you know, we also have the delegation of authority, and that is a document that comes before the board in December typically. And so that'll be an opportunity for the board to weigh in on where you're comfortable, where you think maybe this isn't high enough, or hey, I want to ratchet this back down. Because there are a few exceptions to that. The delegate, the $100,000 is actually set in our procurement purchasing and procurement policy. The delegation of authority, it clearly, well, the goal is that it clearly illustrates where I have authority, where the board reserves authority, and then there are some exceptions to that purchasing and procurement policy, in particular as they relate to our AIP grant-funded projects. Where as long as the amount that the airport pays is not over $100,000, I can actually approve change orders that exceed my typical purchasing authority. That's just an example. So good question.
Thank you.
On that note too, we'll make sure that we just send out in an email, Cameron, the current delegation of authority, because that way if commissioners have a moment to look at that, we would love to hear your thoughts and feedback in advance of what we prepare for the December meeting.
Thank you very much.
Good analysis and review. Angela, generally that delegation authority is a January review when we approve it, December, something like that?
I think it's December.
Yeah. December, okay.
We have a whole batch of annual documents we approve at the December meeting. I think it's in that one.
Yes. Okay. Additional questions with respect to the recommendation number of professional airport general contractor on call? Is our liability insurance coverage in line with industry, the million, 2 million? I imagine you guys carry a little more than that liability policy.
We see it 1.3 or 2.4 pretty often.
Okay.
Those are the typical ranges that we see. If you guys need additional insurance, we can look into that for sure. These projects are pretty small overall.
Okay.
Most of them are. I mean, we've done a quantity of them over the last few years here, some structural improvements, odds and ends, and some research. A couple ones we're looking at now are some fire alarm upgrades for the terminal, few door replacements, things like that. So it's pretty small dollar volume.
Yeah.
Pretty small amount, but obviously if you don't know what's going on, it can be tough to actually get the work to happen out here on site.
And this is Lance Kramer. He has served helping the airport for years now, and Justin Mendenhall, who also helps and in particular helps price things. And you know, we've been really happy with the partnership we've had. An area where we fully expect that we'll be using our on-call general contractor is in our air traffic control tower. And that one, we hope that we get to be proactive there, but as this board knows, we're on serious borrowed time on a lot of the MEP in that building. And we've applied for different grant funding, and we expect to make some improvements there. And that's where, you know, we don't expect that this will be used for things more than, you know, $1 or 2 million at a time, that size of project. Certainly we don't expect to issue a task order to our on-call general contractor to expand the terminal building, for example. We'll bid that out, but we do expect that it'll be that type of work. And as mentioned in the budget discussion, we think there's going to be a lot of those smaller projects within the terminal building as we refresh things and, you know, consolidate and improve the resiliency of our airline IT function, for example, those pieces where we'll be working together.
We're set to be out here at the end of March anyway for the boarding bridges. That will give you guys good overlap to minimize costs and exposures and everything else that's out there.
Yeah. And that didn't influence the decision in any way, but it's certainly an added benefit that they will be out here already. The incremental cost of adding work to that is relatively small.
My only reflection on that question is a lot of inflation's happened. $1 million, $2 million was pretty standard even 20 years ago for our liability limits, and maybe there's opportunities. Dan, you might want to look into this and make sure we're on target with what you're seeing in your world for those.
Yeah, it's a fair point. It's always worth a refresh comprehensively to look at our coverages and limits and work with the broker to make sure they're adequate in all of our contracts.
Thank you. Okay, we do have a motion, and it's been seconded. We've had discussion. Further discussion? Hearing none, call for a vote. All those in favor of recommending approving the contract with FCI Constructors to provide on-call general contractor service and authorize executive director to sign, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed,
aye.
Same sign. Thank you, Thaddeus. Registered your vote. Okay, motion carries. Next item on the agenda is our Gensler scope of work to perform the conceptual design of the terminal expansion. I'm glad we're a little ahead of schedule. This is a kind of an interesting one. I know Wendy and Thaddeus have been involved, so looking forward to hearing more. My guess is you'll be presenting today.
I am, yes. Thanks, Cameron. So I was here last month, and I'm going to review a few of these slides just leading up to what this concept design scope is. But we're focused on ultimately getting a terminal expansion and more space where it is needed. We just don't want to jump into what is needed right now without thinking about how the future growth plays out. So the airport development plan was done by Intervistas, and it gives us the forecast and great starting point for the program. And this concept design is going to be that middle section right there that we'll be presenting. If you go to the next slide. The ADP gave us this data that tells us in 2041 they anticipate 420 employments. This forecasted amount gets estimated through different methods, but there's a single method that is approved by the FAA, and it's part of the formal report. And it also provides us with the programmatic data to meet that level of employments. So whether it's the number of check-in desks or a square footage for hold rooms or the linear feet of baggage claim, this report already gives us our programmatic data to meet that employment level. So that becomes our starting point. Next slide. Where the ADP left off was just with these types of schematic boxes saying, you might expand here, it might look like this, but that's the level of detail that it went to. So this is where we're picking up, and we'll be taking this further and doing a real analysis, not just of the spatial needs, but also the building system needs, and determining a real plan for how the airport can grow for the next 20 years, or at least looking at 2041.
I will say real quick, you know, the planning exercise, it focuses heavily on the aircraft layout when you're looking at this terminal expansion. So it focuses on the aircraft layout, and then it's looking and saying roughly the square footage that they would imagine in those boxes to support the level of passenger activity we expect. That's how that process works. So, you know, there's the level of detail and specificity was spent in the aircraft positions, not in the illustrative boxes. And so now we get to dig into those. So.
Exactly. Thank you, Angela. Next slide. As just a reminder, we pulled out the visioning, which we would typically do as part of this. So we're kind of a step ahead as far as understanding the guiding principles, look and feel, resiliency goals. And then we have these other projects that are ongoing that create that efficiency we talked about, aligning with construction and setting up the existing airport for success as we aim towards this expansion. Next slide. So this work authorization will conceptually design the terminal expansions and modifications needed to meet the anticipated employments of 2041, including spatial needs and the building systems, and it will also identify reasonable construction phases. So we look all the way out, and then we think about what makes sense and how we can phase that construction. This includes the architecture, and it also includes civil, structural engineering, mechanical and plumbing engineering, electrical and low voltage design, baggage handling, and we have a cost estimating consultant. So it's a big team, and we're looking holistically at the whole terminal. This concept design phase, we have broken it into three different sections that we're calling research and discovery, which is a brief 3-week process, and then the actual concept design is about 12 weeks, and then phase zero reconciliation, which I'll explain in a minute, is about 2 weeks. Next slide breaks out the major components of each one of these. So research and discovery, we get all the consultants up here. We have a kickoff meeting, very thorough site tour. They're doing the MEP systems assessment, structural assessment. We're reviewing all the record documentation we have. We're doing an existing code analysis of the building and developing our BIM model. So that just sets us up for a full, deep understanding of what is here right now, and then we get to look into the future. The first phase is design alternatives, where we do iterative designs and test out different planning strategies, looking big picture at where the airport wants to grow, where the aircrafts want to land, maybe some massing studies at that point. Then through our work with the airport, presenting those, we identify a single preferred alternative, and we spend some time developing that one direction. And all of our consultants will develop a written systems narratives to support that one design. And during that phase, that's also when we'll identify what the construction phases should look like. And so in our conversations with the airport, we will get an understanding of what that first phase, what the budget might be, what the big drivers are, what the immediate needs are, and we can identify that should be phase zero during this. And then our cost estimators will provide a cost estimate for that phase zero. And then we built in these 2 weeks at the end because it gives us a moment to look at the big picture, that phase zero, and the cost, and say, is this aligned? Do we need to change anything? Is it double what we thought it was going to be? Do we need to make any changes? And we're just getting set up, getting proposals, getting consultants on board to be ready to kick off that phase zero immediately after this project. Next slide, the actual deliverables are two different documents. We typically do an 11 by 17 design book that captures our process as well as our scaled drawings, and then a written narrative that has all of our consultant summaries in there, and that will have the cost estimate in it as well. And just for some visuals of an understanding, the next slide, these are just examples of what that might look like. So we're talking about conceptual floor plans. We might not know where all the furniture is landing, where every toilet is, but we know that the restrooms are sized to accommodate the need. And we know the general layout of everything. We'll have some renderings, both exterior and interior, have an idea of massing, and we'll get more specific on that phase zero, the more immediate need. And that is what we have for the concept design phase. Happy to answer any questions or clarifications.
Questions for Rebecca?
I think mine is more for Angela, just understanding the process. So we get the conceptual design. When do we go to RFP for, like, she's got the blueprint to do the work. She delivers a test, and then we do an RFP to get to work on phase zero? Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, so the conceptual design is going to really define what it is that we'd like to build,
yep.
You know, to support through 2041 and the logical phases of that.
Yep.
And so the next step after that is actually a task order.
Okay.
I mean, we could bid it out, but I think the likely plan is a task order for the on-call architect, so for Gensler, to design it.
Okay.
And as part of that design process, then it ends with bidding it out,
Thank you.
Out the construction.
Okay.
But we're certainly not ready to pull the trigger on that because from a funding perspective,
oh.
we don't even know what problem we're trying to solve.
Right.
And so one of the major deliverables from this is cost estimates for those phases.
Mm-hmm.
So then we can identify funding sources for our expansion and, you know, figure out the funding side of it so then they can design and bid out the work. Does that
yes,
answer your
absolutely.
Question?
Yes, absolutely. I just wanted to see where it fell in the big picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lee, did you have a question?
I did, thank you. I was looking at this exhibit that I think was provided by Intervistas that talks about what we need to have at each level of throughput. Do they consider the time it takes to get through the check-in lobby, the security checkpoint, and baggage claim? Is that a factor in determining what we need to do to meet the capacity?
Yes, they break it out per space,
mm-hmm.
and they'll look at, they gave us the programmatic needs for each space, and each one is different based on its units of measurement. So a check-in lobby, they would tell us the number of positions, not a square footage, but there are industry standards where we extrapolate number of positions, this amount of depth, this amount of queuing, and then we can get to a square footage for that pretty quickly.
But do we get to a time, amount of time it takes to move through the system?
Yes, that has been built into their analysis.
And where do I see the amount of time that's built into those three categories?
I'll take it as an action item to
okay.
send you some of that more in-depth stuff. I mean, I love that stuff and think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone else thinks it's interesting, I'd love to share.
Yes, please.
But that was part of our airport development plan project.
Okay.
And so
good.
I'm really proud of the work that Intervistas did and the level of sophistication. So, you know, you really look at each point along that customer journey. So parking,
right.
for example, there's planning activity levels
mm-hmm.
for parking, and that looks different than, you know, at the check-in desks, which we have plenty of check-in desks,
mm-hmm.
just, you know. But then up to the security checkpoint, and you know, that processing and assumptions about TSA pre-check versus non-pre-check. It's why we push TSA pre-check and enrolling in that so much, is because it's best for us as an airport. It's
right.
so much more efficient for processing. But you know, at the security checkpoint, for example, you look at peak hour demand, and that typically,
mm-hmm.
and with that, your peak hour demand involves the arrival curves for passengers. So peak hour demand at a checkpoint is almost always in the early morning, because not very many people want to arrive 2.5 or 3 hours early for a flight in the early morning. Whereas we start to see people trickle in for flights later in the day, you know, at that 2 to 3 hour mark.
Mm-hmm.
5 a.m. flight, people are getting there. Most people get there about the same time. And so the lines, you know, the process, you just don't have as much time to process
right.
the same number of passengers. And so it's at each of those points that you're looking at that. And then, you know, within that, we call it the hold room area. That's a secure area. We don't have a jail here. So if anyone's unfamiliar with that term, hold room is just the post-security area inside the building. And so there, you're looking in, as an airport, you have to make some decisions about the level of service you want to have. So there's
right.
level of service A, and that involves the amount of square footage you have per passenger.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously the number of passengers you have out there is an output from the modeling that you do at the security checkpoint.
So essentially Gensler is using InterVista's plan as their Bible.
Correct.
Yes.
And I will add one thing. InterVista's did some, in their evaluation, they used that level of service, which used to be C, it's now called Optimum,
oh.
for everything. I know they changed it, it's very annoying. But sometimes they looked at it and said, this is what you need for Optimum. If you want a better level of service, you might consider this.
Uh-huh.
And so those are things that we will consider as we dig into each area and say, see where the needs are, where the priorities are. And do we just want to meet code and build the ideal Optimum layout, or do we want to improve things in certain spots and provide a higher level of service?
Well, I think that as many things as we focus on this airport, especially with the federal stuff and the grants and all those things, we should never lose sight of customer service. And that's what makes this airport a great airport. It's actually just moving through this airport fast. Because I've been on those 5:30 flights where I arrive at 5 o'clock and made the flight.
Oh, good.
And kidding aside, that is what's going to, the reputation here seems to be that you move through this airport reasonably in a reasonable amount of time. Unlike the hub airports, and so as long as we can keep that concern high level, I appreciate it.
Great.
If I can just echo that is, I get that feedback consistently in the community. That's one of the great things about Grand Junction, is that it's easy to get through, and that's what people love traveling here. And they go to any other airport and they forget how spoiled we are in Grand Junction. Be able to park a car, get in, sometimes in a half an hour when you're running late, you think you're going to miss your flight, you don't. So, or when you're tired after a long trip, then you get here and it's just easy to get out and get to your car and get home. So,
yep.
Yeah, if maintaining that, I think, is key. And it'll be tough as we grow, but that's certainly helpful.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And also, you know, thanks for thinking about the systematic piece of this, because it is a system, you know, and if not for the board supporting our staff and wanting to modify the security checkpoint we have now, for example, a few years ago, where we invested close to $1 million in our security checkpoint to enable them to bring in much more sophisticated equipment and to reconfigure the checkpoint in a way that I think most passengers and actually most employees probably couldn't tell you exactly what changed other than some of the equipment changes. But it really increases that throughput rate, which alleviates a queuing problem, right? And the best way, it sounds silly, but the best way to manage the queue is to just not have one form. Once it starts forming, it's really hard, and the math of it gets really messy, frankly, in modeling. But when you look at it, you just need to make sure that you have adequate capacity. And so that's actually part of why it's so important that we're working on the phase zero expansion. We do need more square footage out there. We know that based on the aircraft size, in order to maintain a high level of guest experience. But we also need to make sure that we have more space so that we can actually, we have enough space to add a third checkpoint lane when needed. And right now we don't have that, because that's our exit lane. And it'll also allow us to have this opportunity to have an exit lane that doesn't have a door you push open. you know, and utilize modern technology and things like that. And so it really is, it's a systematic element of the terminal that I think makes the puzzle really fun, but also is something that, you know, we need to make sure that we have clear plans for, because once you get behind, it's really painful. We don't want to be like some of the airports in the region. We have to hold people at the security checkpoint before they can go through because we don't have enough space post-security.
Ouch.
So.
Yeah.
Additional questions for Rebecca? Can we back up one slide? Maybe one more. Okay. Just a little clarification around, I think it's a fifth bullet, up to 3 renderings of proposed concept. Will this include pricing of those 3 different concepts, or just here's kind of what we think is going to be happening?
We'll explore different options preliminarily, but then the plan is to move forward with a single option and get pricing of phase 0 of that option.
Okay.
We could provide additional pricing for the other phases, but I don't think it will do you a lot of good considering escalation. So many variables that will change throughout the time. So it's really focused on that phase 0 and a singular option. But then we launch into the actual design and construction cost of phase 0, and there's ample time to continue to develop things, change things, and refine the design through that whole process.
It may be helpful from your experience, if there's 3 different concepts, a Volkswagen, a Buick, and a Cadillac, to kind of share your insights with what those might look like, so it gives a little bit of a reference point for the team.
Yeah, we can share historic cost per square foot ranges that we've seen through the airport development during that phase, so that can help inform it. I anticipate the sizes of all of our options to be very similar, since we're basing it on the program that was developed in the ADP. So we don't necessarily anticipate the 3 options being small, better, best, but more as 3 different aesthetic or massing or planning strategies of how to grow the airport.
And something I've really appreciated in our work with Gensler is, while they might not go through the full pricing exercise to say, you know, option A costs this, we think, option B costs this, option C costs this, they're very good about highlighting for us in a proactive way those elements that are likely to be low cost and those elements that are likely to add a lot of cost to the project, to help inform that, so that we get on a path that together and we have the same goal, where it's actually sustainable and financially feasible. So.
Very good. Appreciate the time to explore that in more detail. Mm-hmm. Any further, Thaddeus, you've been kind of quiet. Are you still with us?
Yep, good to go out here. Super pleased with the progress the team has made. The presented options for combinations of materials and colors were just phenomenal. It's been wonderful to work with the team.
Thank you. Would you be willing to offer a motion to approve it?
Yep, so moved.
Fair enough, Thaddeus.
There we go. This is what I needed to see right here.
Okay.
I'd like to move to approve the Gensler work authorization number 007, the amount of $436,654 to perform conceptual design for the terminal expansion and authorize the executive director to sign.
Thank you, sir. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. This is not a resolution, so we can vote verbally. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you, Thaddeus. Opposed? Same time. Motion carries. Beck, appreciate your time and informing us, keeping us up to speed.
Thanks for making the drive over.
Right. Okay, Air Service Incentive Agreement, just an update, discussion on this item. Angela?
Yeah, so I'm just going to tee up this item, and then Harrison Earle, our Air Service Development Consultant, who's online, will actually present. So we wanted to get this before the board to really discuss an overhaul of our Air Service Incentive Program that we have at the airport, and so this is why it's on the agenda as discussion today. You're not asked to take action, but we would like feedback so that we can come to you to take action at that December meeting. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Harrison.
All right, Well, good afternoon, everyone. Apologize, but there's some background noise here. I'm in an airport right now, so we'll do our best here. Just kind of wanted to refresh everyone on the incentive program, why we have it, and how we got to the point where we are right now. So, you know, incentive programs are designed for airlines to reduce the barrier of entry into the market, make it so that they believe generally correctly that they're going to lose money at the beginning of starting a new service. There's a ramp up period. And so we provide an incentive to kind of take away that argument against new service. We make it easier to start up. We make it cheaper for them to start up, demonstrate some support. And there's a defined level of what the airport is allowed to do per FAA guidance. So we're kind of coming right up against that guidance of what we're allowed to do to be able to provide an incentive for them. Cameron, can you go to the next slide? So there's two big categories of incentives here. So there's the ones that the airport do, and that's what we're talking about today. And so these are things like reducing and waiving fees, and it's advertising and marketing assistance generally. Most airports have policies in place that provide this. This is an expectation that airlines often have, that they're going to have some sort of support from the airport. They generally want it for as long as possible. It's important that a decision making generally, if you don't have it, that's a negative. If you do have it, it's something that they, you know, you are indicating you want to partner with them and help them grow. There's also a whole lot of other tasks like that our community can do, like a minimum revenue guarantee, spending more on advertising. We are very fortunate that we have the Grand Junction Regional Air Service Alliance that can do those. That is completely separate from what we're talking about today. It's completely separate from the airport, but it is an enormous asset for this community that we can have them participate in these kind of agreements. Since we are effectively barred from doing so, with the exception, as you know, from whatever that was last month or the month before where you approved the SCASD MRG with SkyWest, that's the only time you can touch those, where the Air Service Alliance can't pick and choose how they want to be involved. Next slide, please. So we originally came to you in 2020 to develop the first air service incentive program for the airport. And it was designed in a way that it incentivized new flying to large hub airports. So we looked at, you know, call it 20 or 30 biggest metro areas around the country, and that's where we wanted the incentives to be provided. So, you know, we said in San Francisco, for example, we're going to incentivize all three airports in the Bay Area because we want that service to the Bay Area regardless of the airport used. We revised this last year with you. It had some relatively minor changes to align with new FAA guidance. I wouldn't say it structurally changed the program, but we did refresh it. We made sure it made sense. And this year, what we're coming to you with is a complete rewrite of the program to simplify it, to make sure it perfectly aligns with the FAA guidance. And we're also providing some extra incentives for seasonal service, for new intra carriers, and for the first time for carriers who are growing what they offer on an existing flight, so increased capacity on a route that they already serve, which is something the FAA now says we're allowed to do, so we wanted to incorporate it. And so on the next couple slides, I'm going to walk through just, you have a similar table in your packet here, so I'm not going to read this word for word, but you'll want to call out a few things between what the current program is and then the proposed program. You have a draft in your agreement, in your packet. We're not talking about adopting this today, but wanted to build out, you know, get this in front of you, brief you, and make sure we answered any of your questions. So where I put the red boxes are the core changes where I'm gonna focus here. So our eligibility for target destinations, we're opening this up. We're not doing target markets anymore. You know, practically speaking, I think we think there's pretty limited impact from that. We're still seeking air service in those, you know, major markets, but we're, from an administrative standpoint, rather than coming to you every time we have a route that's added or taken away and we need to update the table, we're just opening it up to make our lives easier going forward. Incentive categories really haven't changed. We've renamed and kind of consolidated, but the same kind of service. We're looking at new service, whether that's year-round or seasonal, significant increase in seat capacity, and then new entrants get a little bit extra. Next slide, please. So from the incentives of what we're offering, the operational incentive is waivers of rents and fees, so it's fees that the airline would have paid that they're no longer going to be paying. We do still have this barrier on the level of service, but we kind of made these a little bit more they are more generous and they are simpler to understand. So lower types of service get the same kind of agreement. This was partly designed, both to be generous because we can, and also to make the administration of the program easier for the airport staff so they didn't have to, be looking back at agreements for every single one of these they do. Marketing support, we also just made this a flat number and kind of eliminated an option to, trade some dollars between the types of incentives that, frankly, we never saw interest from a carrier in doing that. So eliminating it doesn't feel like we're getting rid of anything, and it doesn't eliminate some administrative burden. And then finally, that increased capacity is, I think, a really important one, that if there is increased capacity by more than 25% year over year, we will be able to waive a portion of their fees for that increased capacity. And, we obviously focus a lot on our existing service, making sure it's enormously successful. And so this is an extra tool for us to, say, get an extra flight or a larger airplane to one of our existing destinations and be able to give something back to the carrier who's making that investment for us. Next slide. Really the change here, so for new entrants, we are just simplifying again how we're giving them. They don't pay rent for the first 12 months. If they're brand new, we give them a little bit extra on the second year. And then we've defined seasonal service a little bit differently than before. This is the FAA's guidance that seasonal service has to be less than 7 months, so we're adopting that, giving somebody an incentive to come in for a couple weeks in the peak and leave. So just kind of cleaning that up a little bit rather than structural changes. Next slide, please. So, I mean, I've walked you through kind of these things. I'm not going to read these all here, but we really think this is a nice program because it's simple, because it's easy for us to communicate, it's easier for us to administer it, and we're able to add the incentive for the increasing seat capacity on existing service, which we think is a huge benefit for some of our opportunities that we have right now. I think that's my last slide, and so Angela and Dan, unless you have things that you want to add in there, I would love to, entertain questions and have a discussion about this.
I really like the focus on incentivizing existing services, too. And the growth for existing services, I think that's a great pivot.
Little bit. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you didn't.
A little bit complicated in the FAA guidance for what we're allowed to do. So we've structured this, as generously as we can, that we're incentivizing increased seat capacity of 25% or greater. It has to be net new, so you can't add some and take away some. But we do think this is a useful tool for us. And if you look at a lot of the growth we've had over the last couple of years, it's been carriers like United, who's increasing Denver, both frequency and seats. And so we want to encourage that. We want that for American. We'd love to see SkyWest Delta be able to do that same thing. And so putting this in makes it very, it's transparent to all carriers, but also, opens the door for, this is our strategy and we're going to put some money where our message is.
Yeah.
Harrison, you might, we're on Lindy's question, you might draw out what you're seeing in the industry as airlines' expectations from airports with respect to what do we have to give up there, I guess. Is it 25% for 25% landing fee waivers, or what does that look like?
It's what it effectively does, and this gets a little bit complicated on the math, but if you're adding 25% seat capacity, effectively the increase in your landing weight that comes with that, which is probably going to be somewhere around 25%, is what we waive. So we can only waive that incremental piece of it.
Thank you.
We spent many hours on this, Harrison, Dan, and I, and we went back and forth on whether we thought it made sense to be more specific in exactly how all those examples would work in the agreement, or more vague and deal with it as it comes up. Ultimately, what you see is that we think it's best to just deal with it as it comes up, because there's so many different types of circumstances. But this general guidance allows us to administer it in a way that makes sense, and we believe is fair and, you know, again, as a team administering it, you know, in those ways. But it looks the way, like the landing fee waiver, for example, it looks different if American were to upgauge two of their Phoenix flights to mainlines. The difference in seats might be the same, actually, as if they added two more frequencies to that. But the difference in landed weights, you're going to have way more landed weight added if they add the two frequencies than if they upgauge two aircraft, for example. And so we feel confident that we can figure it out, but we couldn't find a simple way to, you know, illustrate out all those examples on here.
Just curious whether airports are doing, what are the yardsticks that that you see in the industry, the educational force? Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly put in a plug for your secret weapons in Harrison and Angela, which is what I'm seeing at least is that airports have not thought through at this level of detail exactly how this significant increase in capacity would function. I think we are probably ahead of our colleagues in peer airports in terms of trying to actually figure out how this would be administered. Because again, the FAA and the new policy that was adopted last year just shifted to more of a principles-based policy where they just said, you can incentivize a significant increase in capacity through increased frequency or upgauging. They didn't tell us how to do that. So I think we're actually ahead of the curve on this particular brand of incentive.
I agree with you completely, Dan. So I have another client who's having me do a research project on airport incentives right now. So you're getting the benefit for free of that learning. And, you know, this type of incentive is still very rare out there. It's much more focused on the traditional side. So I think this is something where we stand out. And it also aligns really well with what we want to see.
Great. Thanks, Harrison, for letting us know we're getting this for free, because I was going to shift my concept to charging the other airports for the work that you're doing. So since we were the first guinea pig, so thank you. Appreciate that. Additional questions for Harrison or Dan or Angela?
I guess just a silly question, but how does this get communicated to the carriers? And is it pitched and how do they become aware?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
So within the airlines, each airline has an airport affairs group at their headquarters. And those are the groups that we work with on all of our leasing and ultimately on all of our building. You know, our finance team works with their accounting team to actually get the bills paid, but still, those individuals, their job is to make sure they're subject matter experts on the airports in their portfolio. And so that's how we communicate this, is through them. And then we meet with the network planning teams at each of the airlines as well. And so we make sure they know generally what our program is. And, you know, some airlines like to know all the specifics and some just want to know generally, do we have to pay rates and charges if we add new service? And it's like, oh no, you don't have to pay rates and charges for the first 2 years. Great. And so that's part of the goal too in the program is making it simple to administer, also simple to talk about,
right.
so that you know the network planners know, oh yeah, Grand Junction, okay, I don't need to worry about the airport costs as I'm actually doing the pro forma on whether I think this route can pencil out.
Okay. Good question.
Yep.
Additional.
And I just wanted to add, if I could, sorry Tom, I just wanted to jump in as another answer to that same question. Just a reminder here again that the FAA and its new policy requires transparency, requires that the terms of the Air Service Incentive Program be communicated and that the incentives that are being offered are also communicated. So that's partly why you see the shift in the format that it takes. It's now in a resolution. It'll be posted on the website as the old one was, but I think this shift in the format is in line with the FAA's transparency requirements. So that they made a big push to say, not only if you have a program, it needs to be kind of communicated out to the world in a very transparent way.
I think it aligns so nicely with the work we've been doing with updating our governance and procurement and all of those other policies too. So I really like it.
Yeah,
thank you, Lindy. One of your slides, just a little bit of a rabbit trail since we just still have a couple extra minutes. You mentioned Travel Bank as additional incentive. Is this something that we thought about working with the Chamber of Commerce on or large employers like hospital or college? You said it's marginally effective, I think.
Yeah.
So what's your sense on that?
This is something we've talked about in the past. I think it's the hassle of administering it is generally a challenge for an organization, and it's really hard to enforce. So we've tended to lean on the Air Service Alliance a little bit as a better avenue, because it is, you know, they have a funding stream, they have the ability to, you know, a board make a decision, not go out to a bunch of individual companies. Now, I will say that there is certainly a possibility for that group to go work with individuals to supplement their funding, or individual organizations. We've talked about that in a few different ways. All of that is outside of what the airport can do.
Right. Harris, I was just wondering if you've seen a successful model in some communities that, you know, should the chamber or some entity here look to emulate, is there something that we can share to add additional incentive for those airlines considering our market?
Yeah, I really haven't seen great examples of this in a lot of places. I think it's more of an old school way of thinking about things. I think now with the minimum revenue guarantees, kind of in the last 5 to 10 years, the airlines have really moved towards preferring that because it does reduce their risks significantly.
Sure.
And makes it very clean for them.
Okay. Just didn't want to lose an opportunity to explore something else to enhance our air service. So thank you.
Absolutely. I appreciate you thinking of it and thinking through different ways we can do that.
Okay.
It also tends to work a little bit better when you have a dominant employer in the community. So those travel banks where they buy a certain number of tickets in advance tend to work in places where you've got, you know, the headquarters for a major insurance carrier, something like that, where you've got a handful of major employers who can buy into the bank in a meaningful way.
Right, without a doubt. We're getting close, Dan.
I think like Walmart and all.
Not to disparage. Not to disparage. There are a couple of other cities where it's more obvious than that.
Without a doubt. Yeah, and we just lost Costco, so much for the cheap retailer. So now got it. Yeah, right. Okay, thanks for being kind to us. All right, that concludes the discussion, I think, on this item. We'd like to go into staff reports if we can. Angela, would you want to lead us off on our staff report?
Yes, I would. We have a couple of slides. First, I want to make sure commissioners have the details for the inaugural Delta flight, which is before our next board meeting. Right around the corner. So we're still excited about it. We're confirming speakers. We do expect to have state and federal elected representatives there. And so we're really excited about this celebration. And the timing of the flight is really nice too. Sometimes inaugural flights are really early or late, and this one's right in the middle of the day. So this is our tentative plan right now. These flights can sometimes come in early, and so Cameron will be coordinating with you. We'd love to have the airport board there to participate. Kudos to staff for all their work to get this service going and successfully, especially Ben and Ryan, who had to work really hard to get all the Delta IT stuff set up and gates prepared, but I want the board to know we're in really good shape on that. I don't have any air service slides today, those that I typically report. I didn't report last month either, but I will give them a robust report at our next board meeting. I also wanted to call attention for the board to the fact that we are going to have our joint agency meeting the same week as our airport board meeting, and so we're preparing that. If there's anything that is important to you that I cover in that meeting, will you just reach out and let me know? Otherwise, we will just give that 30,000-foot view that we've typically given to make sure that our airport sponsors are informed on what's going on at the airport and have an opportunity as full boards to weigh in and give the airport their input. So, I do have actual activity numbers. Things continue to, our numbers look great. October looked excellent. September and October, we both saw load factors in the 80s again. I can't emphasize what an incredible fact that is, because we're seeing, you know, 20% growth in our seat capacity. It's really unusual to see that kind of growth and maintain load factors that high. But this is exactly what the airlines want to see, and that's why they're continuing to invest in Grand Junction. You saw in the budget that we were really conservative about what we budgeted for activity levels, and I want to make sure the board knows that by no means represents our goals when it comes to the activity levels and our passenger levels. We just want to be fiscally responsible and recognize the tool of the budget and the role it plays. We are working with our carriers, our existing carriers, to help them grow as well as we welcome Delta. And so just want the board to know that we think air service is looking really good. We think the future is bright. Our rental car contracts are out for RFP right now, and so we do expect that in the coming months we'll have new rental car contracts to come to the airport board with, hopefully with more favorable terms and you know, more financially favorable in particular terms to the airport. Those contracts are structured in a unique way, so I think it'll be fun for the board to get to see those and weigh in on those. But otherwise, thank you for all the support and for approving the budget. The December meeting, we really like to ask the board to approve the budget at the November meeting because it helps us as a staff to prepare all those documents for the new year for your approval in December, you know, knowing that the budget is now static, right? So it can tee from that. And so when it comes to the rates and charges document, the delegation of authority, all of those annual documents you'll see at the December board meeting, those will all tie back to this budget. That's all I have today.
Thank you, Angela. Appreciate that. Any questions for Angela on activities presented? Okay. Finance, Jennifer.
There were no payments over $100,000 in October, but these financials are for September, so you will see some cash changes there. So passenger airline landing fees increased. Due to several flights on larger aircraft, this is calculated on land and lane. Non-passenger landing fees increased. Still, FedEx had 13 more landings year over year, so that number is higher. There's still also a little bit of BLM activity for the month of September. Okay. So, oh wait, go back one. Sorry. Operating expenses are below budget as of September just because we budget throughout the year and separate that out evenly, so we expect that to flush out by the end of the year. Non-operating revenue expenses are primarily driven by construction activity. I don't know if you saw in the financial statements, I saw that it was interesting that we budget for that expenses and contributions that we receive annually as one big lump sum, and you can see that this month it's catching up, so that shows why we did that amendment for that for 2024. Okay. Okay, assets and liabilities. Cash balances decreased due to timing of payments and receivables. We paid about $2 million out in payments in September. Capital accounts receivable and payable reflect the timing of capital projects and grants receivable cycle. The same every month, you can kind of see what's going on this month as well. Are there any questions on September?
Thank you for being thorough in your packet presentation. That helps a lot in addressing the changes. Anything else for Jennifer today? No? All right. Any other business which needs to come before the board today? Do we know if Dylan's absence is he's out hunting?
He's hunting.
Okay.
Or he's on an armed nature walk. We don't know.
We always wish him success in his venture, whatever that might be.
Yeah, he was on the call.
Dylan is on the call, yeah, right? So, Dylan, do you want to give a report on your personal activities, or just say, hey, I'm having fun?
You knew Tom was going to call.
It's a little bit of
It's a little bit of fun. Angela is a little bit more accurate in that it's a expensive nature walk right now, but getting a good workout, so silver lining.
Absolutely. Need to have a balance of life, both work and outside activity, so we wish you well.
We call that type 2 fun.
Yep, thank you.
All right, very good. I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Post same sign. Thank you, Thaddeus, for your attendance. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you.
We'll all be alert.
All right, thank you, Tom.
Rebecca, thanks for coming over.
Good seeing you. Yep, likewise.
Thank you.
Yeah, I am too. It's gonna be good. I know. I'm like, it's gonna be so good. Baby steps, right? It's not gonna happen.
I have underestimated the time commitment as a city council person. So the prospective candidates I chat with, I may up that closer to 15 to 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the thought process. It's always more than you think it's gonna be.
Right.
Blowing up stuff.
And to even try to.
That will have to replace.
Barely